is a distinctive sub-problem within the broader social economy agenda. Let's look at the discussion of the concept and definitions and weaknesses, perhaps, of the social enterprise one. And then sort of skip down to some of the more specific kinds of questions. Let's give ourselves, I'd say, 15 minutes on the definitional question. So by my accounting, Aicha, Matt, and Juhi all raised issues around the definitional problem. If any of you want to say something on this theme.
I'm just confused, really. I mean, the literature maybe is not fully developed, so there's really no consensus. But what we meant by social enterprise at the beginning of the term, and now, you know, this turns out to be encompassing everything, you know, from joint stock companies to religious groups to everything. So I really want to clarify. So mine is more a question rather than a comment, and
This is bottom of page 87. Social enterprise is increasingly understood to include a variety of forms along a continuum, from profit-oriented businesses engaged in sizable social commitments to dual-purpose businesses, and I'm skipping, to nonprofit organizations engaged in missing supporting commercial activity. I mean, that's a whole lot of things. What analytical payoff are we getting from talking about these things that are very different from each other as a collective group?
That's on page 81?
Bottom of 87, carrying on to 88.
That's in the...
That's in what Curlin wrote about the U.S.
Right.
Yeah, and also it's context-specific. I mean, what people, you know, the person who, like Curlin writes on U.S. and someone else defines it in a totally different way in Zambia. I mean, so...
There also was a completely related definition in the previous book we read, I forgot. I think it was the Canadians.
Order.
Yeah, no, that's also a different thing, exactly.
Yeah, they defined it as well. It was more like market based, and really more like a business, a social business.
Well, they made a distinction, which I don't think is generally made, between social business and social enterprise. Mm. I couldn't quite figure out in the Canadian book that distinction was made. I found it, the methodological strategy in this book, which is to put no discipline whatsoever on the concept and to say it's whatever people use, and yet there is a core to the concept that seems to be in play, and then it gets stretched or narrowed. But it's very confusing to the stance that we're just going to take whatever people call the social enterprise and then compare the different contexts, but it's different contexts for different things, so yeah.
On the methodological ground, I also found it was confusing that, okay, the social economy varies, but we have only one, and actually not clear definition of the state, of international aid, of all the other things, of the market, and those do not vary by context. Which is sort of, even their strategy, not very sensical.
So what do you think is there a core, a definitional core to the idea of social enterprise that runs through most of these chapters? I mean, you can't say through everything because there's not that much consistency, but is there a core which defines an appropriate theoretical object?
Commercial activity.
Yeah, I mean, they operate through the market, the capitalist market. I mean, they sell goods, provide goods and services. That seems to be the only.
Well, that does.
Well, that's one condition combined with the condition of not attempting to maximize profit in every case. Mm-hmm. Even if they make profit, they're not trying to maximize
it. Priority
so you have a social mission. That seems to me they all. Well, I'm just saying. You have a social mission. It's not that the purpose of the organization is not profits. It's solving, engaging some social issue. That's the purpose. And you diagnose that that is indeed the purpose by various criteria, and of course it could be a smokescreen, you could be wrong. You could make a mistake, a firm could say this is our social mission, but actually they're just trying to make money. That would be a case of a wolf in sheep's clothing or something. So whatever else happens here, a social mission as being the central purpose of the organization, that seems to be given. I think there's other conditions.
Non-state. But it's not a state.
Although that isn't very clear.
Right, so I have to find what it's
just
not.
But just to go back to, I mean, even that first definitional characteristic might not even be appropriate. Are the workers who reoccupy the factory seeking to pursue a social mission, or are they pursuing a...
There's a different... There's also, you find it, one example where it says it triple bottom or double bottom, whatever they say.
The double bottom line and the triple bottom.
So it's basically they want to maximize profit, but also we want to achieve this thing too. So it's not really that it's mutually exclusive.
That's true, and that's what I found really interesting in Zimbabwe. Like, in a way, you really have a subsistence economy, and the social enterprise basically, it's kind of like an economic enterprise, but its social mission is to, create employment and, subsistence to a certain degree. So there, the distinction between the economic function and the social function really isn't very distinct at all, because the economic mission becomes a social mission by itself, right? Yeah. Because they're starving.
I don't think that's what double bottom line means. Profit maximization as an orientation is a single bottom line, financial profit. A double bottom line means there's something else besides profit that you also want to achieve. So that may, in some cases, and there, it implies that in some cases those two things may be trade-offs. So for example, maximizing profit within the limitation of a certain level of ecological friendliness or a certain level of energy efficiency. There's an environmental bottom line as well as monetary bottom line.
How is it different than corporate responsibility?
It isn't.
I feel like, all these companies, in order to increase their publicity and trying to be friendly to its customers, and there was in fact one example, they sell their trademark, whatever, or their name. So it's like if there's a product and it says this is, something supports this environmental group. That's the case.
You could say that it could differ depending on how you define the consequences of not meeting your second and third bottom lines. I think corporate social responsibility, you can say we're a corporation that aims to make profit and we want to do these things that help people. But if we don't do that, there's not going to be a great consequence other than that people might not like us.
So
it's possible to define a second or third bottom line that you have criteria that if you don't meet it, then there's some consequence according to your internal governance or something.
So I think the social... So here's how I would pose this. And the definition, the concept formation problem here. I think we want to have a category that captures what in many, but not all of these chapters, is a distinctive element in the social economy. That is, a social economy organization that's producing goods and services for a market and does make profits out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we don't want to say, as soon as growing power starts opening a store and selling baskets to people, it ceases to be in the social economy.
No. Right? Yes.
So growing power has a social enterprise component. It's producing for a market. When it produces for a market, it's going to try to make a profit. It's not going to price all of the produce it sells so that it loses money on that part of its operation. It sees that as one of the sources of revenue, so it should be contributing to the organization. They might have some subsidized baskets because that's also part of their mission, so they're not going to charge as much as possible. They may do cross-subsidization, so they may have some places they sell at a higher price and others at a lower price, so they have a business plan around it. But we want a definition that does allow that to still, and that understands that it's different if that's part of what you do to raise money by selling stuff in a market, then if you don't. So there are social economy organizations that are fully funded by foundations or by the state or by private donations and do social economy things, but they don't sell anything. So social enterprise does seem to me define something distinctive within this array. And the distinctiveness is that it generates part of its revenues through the sale of goods and services, which means that it only would generate revenues if it was making a profit. It wouldn't be generating revenues from the sale of goods and services if all of that is a, they're losing money on it, you know. It might be hard to tell, but if you had growing power producing vegetables and selling them at half of what it cost them to produce those vegetables, then it's not a commercial enterprise. That's not a market enterprise. It's just distributing it's distributing food to people and charging them a nominal price to offset some of their costs, but it's not actually generating revenues for their operation. I mean, the social enterprises are selling things which add to the revenues of the firm. I think that's what would make it a distinctive thing. Now, there's then a spectrum. There'd be ambiguous cases. I think the corporate social responsibility is a deeply ambiguous case at best. At best, it's ambiguous. You know, mostly it's not ambiguous, but most often corporations that have corporate social responsibility offices, most of them, do it because they think it's good PR. It makes it more likely that they will be treated well in a court case, that they'll be less likely to be sued for things, they'll have a better public image. You know, it's all for that reason. And they fund their corporate responsibility because they think it enhances their long-term profits to do so. Now, it's never the case that corporations are so single-mindedly profit maximizers that they know exactly what will or will not maximize their profits. They're always making bets. And so the way I would think of it is corporate responsibility offices are part of a portfolio of strategies to maximize your profits. And for big corporations, protecting your brand name and having good PR is one of the things you want to do. You can't quite calculate how much money to put into that because there's no return that's directly attributable to it. So whereas you can tell, was it a good or bad investment to build this new factory? You can see how much it costs and see how much you sell from it. There's no way that a corporation can say, should we be putting more or less money into our corporate responsibility office, because they can't assess its returns. There's no way to do that realistically. So they make a hunch, and they, you know, some of them will overinvest in it, some of them will underinvest in it. That's for most cases. Nevertheless, there are some corporations in which I think that's not a correct judgment, where they really do have a corporate mission. There are other indicators of that. Newman. What's
Newman's own?
Paul Newman. You know, his line of salad dressings and salsas and other foods. He gave 100% of the profits, you know, not 5% of the profits, all of the profits went to social justice purposes. And, you know, there were his office, the office within that company that was concerned with deciding where to spend the money, worried about how best to spend the money. So it seems to me there's no doubt about Newman's Own being a social justice concerned commercial company. Now, should we call that a social enterprise? To me, it's a capitalist corporation that run by a very progressive, you know, benevolent guy who is rich and decided that this would add meaning to his life to do it. So it's a good thing, but it's very different phenomenon from these other things. So I myself don't like to include corporate social responsibility in this spectrum. But on the other hand, you can see how it kind of encroaches on, you know, from the one end of the possible range, drow and then tile.
Yeah, but by definition, I don't understand that example. What would be the difference from what we consider to be a social economy, this Newman work?
Well, it's run entirely like a capitalist. You know, he has ordinary employees. It's run by managers. It's totally, it's owned by him. There's no, it's not a non-profit. I mean, it would be different if it was incorporated under this new LC3 thing, which would mean that it would be formally, it would be structured as a social mission corporation. It's not. It's not a non-profit.
Just because of the format of production.
Yeah, that's what would make me more comfortable. As I said, I'm not, I don't have a strong position on excluding it or not from the social economy. It's just that in all other respects, aside from this, it looks like a regular corporation. So, yeah, Thailand and then...
No, I'm just going to ask you a question. You said something, sell other stuff that adds to their revenue. I can't follow that.
Sell...
other stuff to add that adds to their revenues. I mean, other than... Is that... You mean... Or I got it wrong.
I don't remember the sentence in which I used the expression other stuff.
I thought I heard you say, like, that maybe, like, part of the work that Growing Power does is to sell stuff to add to their total revenue.
Right. They sell food to, they sell herbs to restaurants. To restaurants, they charge market prices. Hmm. They don't do any subsidy. They sell baskets to the poor. Those are below market rates, but I think still above cost. That is, if it costs for, if their total cost of producing a basket is $1, they'll sell it for $2, but not $10, so to speak. But they won't sell it for 50 cents. And that's the cross-subsidization. Selling to the restaurants helps to subsidize selling to the baskets, but the net effect of all of the things they sell is to add revenues to the total operation.
I was only convinced, I thought that you were talking something about other than commercial activities. Okay, now I'm clear.
Now there are other associated, there's a distinction made in some of the readings of the following sort. Oxfam has secondhand clothing stores in England, which it generates revenue. So Oxfam's social mission is not to sell secondhand clothing. Anybody can go and buy, my daughters buy secondhand clothing from Oxfam when they're in Europe because they're retro clothing. Right, so they just have a secondhand clothing store. That generates revenues. One of the ways that people contribute to Oxfam is to donate clothing to Oxfam, which then sells it. That's a case of them having a commercial arm, their clothing stores, which provides profits for their social mission, but in which the store itself isn't part of the social mission. Right. That's different from Goodwill Industries. So Goodwill Industries is a sheltered workshop for people who refurbish used clothing and repair things and then sell it. So the shop that sells Goodwill Industries stuff at Goodwill, that is part of their social mission. It's providing insertion employment for people to rehabilitate these used items so that they can be sold. And that's a distinction that gets made in some by some of the things. I'm not. It's a more clearly a social enterprise where there is this tight connection between the mission. Growing Power's mission is good food, and they sell good food, as well as promote good food, as well as educate people about good food, as well as develop new technologies for good food. So good food is their mission, and that's what their commercial side does. So there is a distinction between how tightly connected is the commercial side from the non-commercial side. Juhi.
About the definition, I think just two criteria is not enough to describe the social economy, because many people, I mean, you also point out that corporate social responsibility is a vague area, and also, like, I think, except a few exceptions, many authors in this book, and actually the Canadian book authors suggest like some kind of ownership as a criteria, like not like a purely owned by government, and not purely owned by the investors, but like some kind of social ownership. I mean, I think except the U.S. case,
mm-hmm.
and some kind of corporate case, every examples are like a non-profit or like a social state multi-stakeholder ownership or like a purely cooperative ownership. So I think if we add like a ownership criteria to define the social economy, it will make more clear like discriminate like a cooperative and philanthropic cooperative case and the governmental records. Service providing.
Mm-hmm.
I think just two criteria, which is one is providing good and service with a risk, and the other thing is a social mission. I think it's not enough to like discriminate the other organization.
So social ownership of one form or another, which
yeah.
means this non-distributed surplus.
Yeah. By based on investment.
Right.
It can be distributed based on other things, like
right.
workers' contribution or whatever.
So I think you're right. I think that's the right way to proceed in trying to nail this down, is to have an ownership component to it. The cases which become ambiguous in these terms, I think, are worker-owned firms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just are ambiguous, and I think I think of worker co-ops as having a more hybrid character in this respect, because plenty of worker-owned firms distribute surpluses on the basis of differential ownership. That is, you can have the governance is one person, one vote, but a senior worker who has 10 shares because they've accumulated over time, and a new worker who has one share because they've just bought in, don't get the same dividends, that is, the same share of the profits. So in most worker co-ops distribute surplus that's left over after wages are paid proportional to capital stake.
But that they are not pure investors. What I'm suggesting is not, the social ownership is not, okay, workers are, also workers, not just
right.
pure investors.
Right, so it's just, I'm just saying, to me that has a hybrid character, because
okay.
they are both pure investors and not pure investors. That is, when a worker decides that instead of putting some of their savings into a mutual fund or into the stock market, they're going to put their savings back into the co-op, that decision, in their making of that decision, they are an investor. You know, they're making an investment decision. Now, they may decide that the reason they're putting it into the co-op is out of loyalty and out of solidarity with the fellow workers, and not just because that's where they get the maximum return. You know, so they may not be acting as pure maximizing investors, but that's why I think co-ops have a little bit of an ambiguous character, and some co-ops act pretty much like profit maximizers. They want to make as much money as possible, and they'll do the sorts of things in the market that a profit maximizing firm will do. They'll advertise, they'll undercut competitors, you know, they'll do whatever. Matt.
I'm not on board with an ownership criteria, because it excludes all of the nonprofit it excludes your basic nonprofit organization that I think we want to include. Most nonprofit organizations, at least in the United States, are legally owned by a board of trustees. Their property is owned legally, ultimately, by that board of trustees, who may not, in most cases, aren't.
No, they're not. That's not
customers.
Quite right. That's not quite right, because the board of trustees cannot vote to liquidate the firm and appropriate the proceeds themselves.
Right, there's, so there's statutory limits on what they can do.
That's where the ownership
that's
is.
That's the criteria. Oh, okay.
They are trustees of the firm, but they don't own the assets.
They can't keep the property to themselves.
They cannot appropriate those assets. So a board of trustees can decide to liquidate the nonprofit. That's one of their powers. They liquidate it, they sell the buildings, they've got a huge body of capital, they cannot divide it among them.
Keep
it
themselves.
But aren't they, but they are legally responsible. The board of trustees of a nonprofit, they have a certain legal responsibility.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
they're liable if something goes wrong.
But that's different than what happens to the property.
Right,
I mean, you could say that I'm the trustee for this kid, and so I have to take care of this kid's property, and I have, there are certain rules that affect what I can do and what I can't do. But I can't decide I'm going to liquidate the kid's investments.
But their liability is also extremely limited as board of trustees. They can't be, they can't be. If the nonprofit goes bankrupt, their personal assets are not at risk.
So it's not in terms of like they have a responsibility to a particular constituency that's defined in like the contract that establishes. I mean,
the legal form that establishes a nonprofit stipulates what happens to the assets if the firm dissolves. And there's different ways this can be done. Often it has to go to some other nonprofit, right? So if the Ford Foundation decides to sell off its buildings and close up shop, and it has $200 million in cash in the bank after it does all this stuff, it has to give it to the Rockefeller Foundation, I mean, or whatever. The trustees of the Ford Foundation can't pocket it. And that's the sense in which they don't own it. And it's also the sense in which it's socially owned. It's not owned by any persons, because no person can ever appropriate it. There are complicated, fine print around these things. So you can have a nonprofit that decides to convert to a for-profit organization. And there are rules by how it does this. So Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Wisconsin was a nonprofit mutual insurance company, the kind of old-fashioned insurance company where people get together to collectively insure each other, and they form this organization, and it doesn't make profits. It decided, the board of trustees or directors or whatever, decided that it would be better, for whatever reasons, for Blue Cross Blue Shield to become a regular corporation, for-profit corporation. In order to do that, they had to buy themselves, right? And the money which they bought themselves, which was several hundred million dollars, had to then go to a public purpose. So they built a hospital for sick children somewhere. I mean, they endowed a big thing at the University of Wisconsin Medical School. So they had to basically spend the value of the assets of that corporation on social purposes. Which means that they didn't make any profits directly off of the sale, that is the liquidation of the firm and its conversion to a profit-making firm. They had to come out with no profit from that. But then it was a private, from that point on, it was a private corporation, and it could make profits.
I have another question again with this. So if the Ford Foundation liquidates itself and it has this $200 million, it can't go to the Ford Incorporated?
No. It has nothing to do with Ford Company. Okay. The Ford Foundation is just historically named after Henry, but it's not, no, it can't. If it's a nonprofit foundation and it liquidates, the money cannot go to to private individuals or corporations. They don't own it in that sense.
But that definition puts a lot of emphasis on the legal constraints, which might work for cases where you have a very formalized economy. But it doesn't work for Zambia and Zimbabwe, where you have informal social economy, where all those constraints just do not exist, and what Matt was saying could actually exist on the ground.
Yes, I mean, I think my view would be in those cases where there isn't a institutional framework to separate social economy from capitalist economy activities, and opportunistically organizations can move back and forth depending upon what's best for whatever reasons, the way to deal with that is to just see it as a contradictory hybrid context where there aren't clear organizational forms. Yeah.
So what I thought was a disagreement becomes a clarifying point. Social ownership is an umbrella term that encompasses positive ownership rights as well as negative ownership rights. An example of positive ownership rights would be something that you can do as an owner. A worker can vote in their worker cooperative and have equal voice with everybody else. A negative ownership right would be something that as the owner, quote unquote, or that a negative ownership right would be ownership rights that cannot be exercised. That's still a form of social ownership, things that can't be done, like in the Board of Trustees example. These are both types of social ownership, broadly speaking. Is this positive-negative distinction I'm making make sense? It's a difference between things that the owners can do and things that the owners can't do. They can be purely negative. Social ownership can take a purely negative form.
Well, the term social ownership is only the negative form. It's just saying that the people who control the assets cannot... What it means to be socially owned is that the people who control the assets cannot personally appropriate the assets. That's what the term social ownership means. It's owned by society or within some specification as to what happens to the assets when they get...
A very good question. So if we include ownership as a criterion, as far as I can remember, a lot of the things organizations discussed in this book, really, they're quite ambiguous, isn't it? I mean, there was this woman in, where was it, kind of religious and doing something for the poor people. Could be, and I think it was in Asia.
The ambulance.
Yeah, they
this is
the ambulance.
Ambulance thing.
But it was a non-profit. Right?
Was it?
No.
I mean, I because I remember the
religious.
The family, you know, owned it.
Yeah.
A couple.
A couple, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just...
The European cases are the clearest because
okay.
that, you know, they are all non-distributed profits. Some of them have partial distributed profits. There was some, depending upon the country, there was some variation, but they all had something like this. Yeah.
I was wondering if we can move the discussion to sort of, so whether or not there is maybe we can come up with a useful definition. I'm not sure I would ever agree that there's a correct definition of what something's going to be, but what's interesting to me is the variation in definitions across the different cases, and whether that's how we describe that, whether that's people just have different concepts, they put different things into what they call social enterprise, or compared to our useful definition, it doesn't fall within our useful definition, but it's some hybrid of what we consider falling within our useful conception of social enterprise or not. And then, so if Europe or the US or wherever is the sort of core definition that fits closest with our useful idea of what the definition is what's going on in this sort of book and in conferences and whatever else that sort of spreads the concept of social enterprise, is that a project to globalize that core definition, or to clarify, you know, so if you know, people in the Philippines are reading about this stuff and they're interacting with people from Europe or going to school in Europe and studying this sort of thing, can we expect any sort of convergence towards what we understand as the useful definition? I mean, or do we understand that there will continue to be this diversity of people saying social enterprise but having different ideas of what's in their head?
Which they learn about democracy is problematic. But I would accept
it's been a weekend. Nobody's written on that board.
only come up.
So one way.
Wait, Emmanuel's saying something.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, if we accept that the social enterprise, the social economy only emerge in gaps and contradictions of a given dominant system, then we wouldn't. I wouldn't expect the term or the practice of social enterprise to converge to one kind of like definition or one kind of practice, because it's always kind of like residual in like a given. You know, it always jumps in when there's a need for it.
There's a question of how we use words and how we define concepts. So as sociologists, we want concepts that mean something, that identify a set of mechanisms that are not arbitrary. But words can be used all sorts of ways. So this is the problem I encountered with my use of the term social economy when I had my Quebec experience. I was trying to develop a theoretical model in which I elaborated the model from first principles. So I was trying to sort out the full array of anti-capitalist forms and the strategies and make some sense of what the kind of dimensionality of the problem was. And I came up with this model that had these three forms of power and then various ways in which they got interconnected. And then I began labeling the forms of interconnection. The labels I gave were appropriations from ordinary political language and identifying, showing how those connected to this theoretically generated model, right? So I had a socialist pathway, a statist socialist pathway, which went from social power to state power to the economy. And I felt, yes, that pretty closely corresponds to what classical ideas of socialism were. So I drew up my little arrows and thought these things through. And I labeled one of the pathways social economy. Now, that would have been a conceptual error, that is, would have been a bad appropriation of a public term for this purpose, if indeed the way the term social economy is used did not include that pathway, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so if I, for example, labeled that pathway the capitalist pathway, that would have been stupid. I mean, you can use words however you want, but it would have been, I think, a mistake, because that pathway is not included under all the possible uses of that term. I identified a pathway that indeed is central to, is found in most discussions of the social economy. It's just that that term in its political use encompassed a lot more, because the purposes to which it was being put was, how do we form a coalition that will create a sense of solidarity as we confront the state for resources and for legal forms that will help facilitate our work, right? And that was a very productive conversation I had in that meeting last February. It was just last February. What was it, February a year ago?
February 09.
What?
Wasn't it 09?
I think you were.
It was
09.
It had to be 09. Yeah, last it was. It was 09. No, no.
No, you said you were in Argentina. It was. It should be.
Oh, it was 09.
No,
it was February. Last February.
I remember. I came to your talk. I was sitting there.
Was
you had just arrived from.
It was last February.
Last year.
Yeah, last February. Okay. Anyway, so but if we're going to build the concept, what we want to do is what we are doing. Is to try to identify what the conceptual core is, and then you can see how additional elements get added, but that conceptual core never disappears. Right? So the conceptual core has to be present in all of these. Then we might identify some usages here which really aren't a good use, because they drop the conceptual core and just deal with the add-ons. Right? So the kind of candidates here are, there's a social mission of some sort, right? Now, a social mission of some sort, there's the question, does that include the social mission of creating a cooperative workplace? That is, the worker co-ops count as having a social mission? And there's some ambiguity there, because it's a social mission that is of a particular rather than a general character. That is, it's a social mission for the participants, but it's not so obviously a social mission beyond them. Not all worker cooperatives see themselves as part of a cooperative movement or anything like that. They just So maybe there's some ambiguity, and maybe therefore we don't want to include all worker-owned co-ops in the rubric social enterprise. There's worker co-ops, and there's social enterprises, and some worker co-ops are social enterprises, but not all worker co-ops are social enterprises. Some of the writing here seems to almost suggest that, because the kinds of worker co-ops that they emphasize are the ones concerned with social insertion, with dealing with marginality, not isthmus engineering. So isthmus engineering is a worker-owned co-op of people who could get very good jobs in the conventional capitalist economy. It's not dealing with a problem of social insertion. So, but in any case, I think this is one candidate, right? Another candidate was
you're saying that, for instance, the high-tech co-op does not have a social mission because it does not provide a social benefit at large.
Right.
It's providing. It's very hard to measure.
Yeah, but it's not. It's that its purpose isn't too. We're talking about the. We're not attempting to measure actual effects. When we talk about the social mission, it's meant to be the motivation. It's the motivations of the actors.
So we might actually find out that isthmus associates or whatever does have a social mission,
yeah,
if it turns out that in their constitution it says our goal is not just to be the best engineering firm, but to promote the welfare of our workers.
It would be to provide engineering for environmentally sound projects and for poverty alleviation, or whatever.
But
I mean,
you're saying the social mission has to be universal.
The social mission could be. I mean, I'm thinking about it in terms of who's the constituency.
If it's all internal, then all worker co-ops would count as having a social mission by definition.
Are there really many organizations that have a universal social mission that truly strive to serve all of humanity?
No. Just
together?
People other than the members of the organization. Just, I mean, the growing power wants to help people outside of growing power. It's not just the interns and the staff,
right,
who are going to. They have a mission that's beyond just their own immediate. Rather, beyond the self-interest of the participants.
But when you're defining it that way, you're just excluding worker co-ops.
Yes, so they said that they're not social enterprise. That is, we're trying to give precision. We're not excluding worker co-ops from a real utopian vision of an alternative society. We're saying that this particular category, social enterprise, is going to do some work for us in a menu of concepts to describe different types of organizations within an even broader, I mean, the way we sort of talked about it, the social economy is a broader concept. The market economy is another. Social enterprises straddle market economy and social economy. Worker co-ops can straddle in a different way, but they're not social enterprise in this usage. And so if they would not count as social enterprises. If social mission is to mean something other than just serving the interests of the people inside of the organization. If that's the only thing it does, is serve the interests of the people inside the organization, it can be a humane and constructive and good model, but it wouldn't count as a social enterprise. Now, the only reason to do that is because we think it matters whether you have an association that's trying to serve the needs of people outside of the association or not.
Just a controversy. Like, as an economist, I could say, you know, Microsoft really has a social mission. I mean, surely their main mission is to make money, but on the other hand, you know, they're benefiting humanity, or they have benefited humanity tremendously, arguably, by, you know, inventing software, spreading software, etc., and increasing productive efficiency, making everyone better off.
Right. So that's absolutely right.
That's the other side of the coin, right?
Right. So the one of the times I presented my general framework where there was some economists present, they denied that capitalist firms were driven by, should be viewed as firms in which the central criterion was maximizing profits. The central criterion was meeting human needs because of consumer sovereignty. That is, that's what capitalist firms do, is meet human needs.
Satisfy demand.
And the means to do that is to maximize your profits. Mm. But that...
That is proposed?
That's what this... That's what it is. I argued, and I think it's correct, that the... that capitalist firms have as their goal maximizing profits, and they the means to achieving that goal, completely subordinated to the goal, is satisfying needs, selling your products and services. And if they can do that by tricking people into thinking they want something and need it when they don't, that's fine. There's nothing better or worse about meeting a real need or meeting a phony need. All that matters is that it's in the service of maximizing profits. Plenty of individual capitalists will pull back a little bit from that. You know, they're not all quite that starkly profit-maximizing, but I think it's...
But then does that make measuring the genuineness of the motivation of the actor dependent on the trueness of the need, or no? I mean, because I'm looking at the Unilever mission statement, and it's all about how they're meeting lots
right.
of needs and helping the world and
right.
helping people create a better life through small actions
and
all
and
of
look
this
at,
stuff.
Look at BP.
No, I mean,
I really want a shocking example.
Because, of course, they're not going to say, we're going to make money for our shareholders, because that's, I understand that
right.
they're selling me a story, but if we're measuring purely on motivation, then we take this as false motivation, or we take this as motivation, but we can show that the need is false.
No, I don't think the need has to be false, shown to be false. I mean, lots of capitalist corporations are producing things that meet needs. That's certainly true. And then,
And also, need is a very relative concept. I mean, it's just that, I mean, it really
right.
is, what is a need in the 21st century wasn't a need in the 18th century or whatever. So
well,
it's just
funny,
in
the funny thing
context.
is that throughout this whole course we've been talking about social economy as things that are meant to meet social needs. Like,
so
we know what that means.
Well,
that's why, so all of these are
I understand, but I would...
So all of these are reasons why that. When we add non-distribution constraint, that's the, basically non-profit. That's why adding that seems important, because if you're not distributing profits to anyone, then the social mission seems like it's more authentic. Because you, even if you're making profits, the fact that you don't distribute them, that they're subordinated to the mission, that seems to be, that's why this becomes an important criterion. This, however, then rules out, means that co-ops are not social enterprises. And I don't have any problem saying co-ops are not social enterprises. I think co-ops are a distinctive thing, and they have their own character, and they're an important component of the umbrella concept of social economy. It includes all of the different forms, but I don't think it's very helpful to describe ordinary worker-owned co-ops. Now, stakeholder co-ops or solidarity co-ops are a different matter, because they don't typically distribute profits. They have stakeholder boards, worker governance, but the surpluses that are generated are just plowed back into the mission of the organization. That, for example, the solidarity co-ops in the childcare sector in Quebec, the daycare workers don't get dividends from those solidarity co-ops. There was a hand over here. Somebody was. Yeah, Juhi.
I mean, not non-profit and not for profit is slightly different.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't making. It's the non-distribution constraint that's the either not-for-profit or non-profit don't distribute whatever surpluses they have. So income is generated in the social enterprise. Income is generated through commercial activity, whether or not they're technically non-profit or not-for-profit.
Well, another thing is, I slightly disagree about your definition of social mission. That means satisfy the need of the outside of me, not just pure members, but the outside members. Because I think many social economy organizations, actually the main goal is maintaining employment and
for the members.
Yeah, members.
Yeah.
I thought that social mission is more like a negative term, not like a purely profit maximization. As you said, there are many needs and social needs. There are a lot of social needs, and there are many ways to satisfy it. But like, other than the just profit maximization, the other thing can be a social mission. I think that's the way I understand.
So let's just focus on this. So that proposal says actually this is the key criterion. Because any organization which has a non-distribution principle, by definition, has a social mission. Mm-hmm. That is, these are mutually excluded. Either the mission is social or the mission is profit. And the non-distribution constraint means the organization can make a profit, but it can't be motivated by making a profit. Because the actors don't get the profit. The profit goes back into the organization.
That's inherent in the definition of social ownership that you offered earlier.
But then the question is,
you go first.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what about charity organization, traditional charity organization, or some foundation, or United Way in the U.S.?
So the United Way doesn't sell goods and services, right? It does. Yeah. It gets donations, and
they
it does things.
They just sell some symbolic value and then get donations.
But so they're not a social enterprise because they're not producing goods and services for the market. So the other thing, it has to produce goods and services for the market. Not so if you have a charitable organization which acquires money and then performs a service for people, which it gives, then it's not a social enterprise. It's a, could still be part of the social economy. That is, the social economy means it's an organization that doesn't seek profits but serves needs, but it's not selling anything on a market. So I think the social enterprise concept should mean that they're engaged in commercial activity. And then there are fringy cases, Girl Scout cookies, right? So the Girl Scout organization is an organization that provides for, activities for little kids, and they raise money through selling cookies. And the whole Girl Scout cookie operation is a social enterprise. It generates revenue for a social organization that provides very constructive non-commodified activities. The Girl Scouts themselves are engaged in social activities of all sorts. But that's the commercial arm of the Girl Scouts, so that would be. Yeah.
But the Girl Scouts, their social mission is not to provide healthy, tasty cookies
right.
to the world.
Right.
Their social mission is to support girls
right.
and improve opportunities. So, it just it seems like you can. Well, okay, that was an aside. First thing I was going to say before is that we're talking about social enterprise, or social economy organizations.
They're not all social enterprises.
They're not all social enterprises. Right. So we're talking about a particular. I just want
that to would be my usage would be to say social economy organizations is a bigger category. It's the one that has super fuzzy edges. Social enterprise is a distinctive subtype. And contrary to the Curlin book, I think we can define, or we should define, some core criteria for that kind of organization. And then we observe that they thrive in Europe because there's a whole set of legal forms and encouragement for them. They're kind of semi-half-baked in the U.S. because it hasn't quite stabilized. And then in Africa and Southeast Asia, it becomes very ambiguous because they don't have a context to have all of these properties.
And you account for the fact that the people in those places use the term social enterprise because that's just, they're actually talking about social economy organizations, or
yeah.
Because they got this proposal to write a chapter and they said, oh, okay, I'll write social
enterprise. Well, the term may have gotten into use, and the term may, you know, so one definition takes these two components, produce for the market and have a social mission. Corporate social responsibility fits this one. Right. Some organizations will have these two, but won't produce for the market. That's what we're calling, you know, some social economy organizations. But they might also be called social enterprises some places. I think it's probably these three, and this may be a little redundant, as we've said. If you really have this, well, there is a social mission of some sort there, because it isn't a profit mission.
But yeah. Not necessarily, because what non-distribution really means is that you keep the profit in the firm. So if you can be a hyper-capitalist firm, not distribute any of the profits and just reinvest it. So, you know, I guess you still need social mission.
Well, then nobody's ever getting a return on their investment.
No, but yeah. I mean, if you, I guess, if you look at a narrow enough like time perspective, you know, the internet companies.
They are retaining their profits to grow, but they have an asset which they can sell and privately appropriate.
Okay. Okay. You know, yeah. So because it's an ownership.
So there's a capital gains.
Okay.
You know this. So this is the social ownership. What we've been. You know, it's this plus social ownership.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's that.
Yeah, because without social ownership, you're based on that, including that SaaS corporation. Those three.
The what?
The Newman Corporation.
Oh, right. But I don't know if the Newman Corporation, if the Newman Corporation really had a non-distribution constraint, yeah, that is, yeah. If that was a constraint as opposed to just a choice. If Paul Newman says, I'm not going to distribute these profits, I don't know how it was incorporated. I mean, it's possible that the Newman Corporation was incorporated as a nonprofit foundation. I don't know. It could have been.
I never heard of them asking for tax deductible.
The way it was described in the quarter book was as a capitalist firm.
Okay, so then it's
so one of the things about being a capitalist firm is if you own it, you can decide what to do with the profits.
Right.
Paul Newman chooses to donate.
Right.
No constraint
right.
at all.
So probably the way to regard that is that Paul Newman is a social entrepreneur, but his firm is a capitalist firm. No, that is as a person. The social entrepreneur idea is that as a person, you're motivated by all these things.
It's a moral constraint.
Well, he's a charitable donor. He gives money.
Yeah, why don't we call it nice persons?
And a good actor.
Social
Paul Newman is a nice person and a good actor.
I was wondering if I could put a case out to see if it how we parse it, which is this chocolate cooperative that I know of from Ecuador, which is a cooperative of chocolate producers who grow the beans and make bars in Ecuador and sell them in Whole Foods. So they have a cooperative in Ecuador. They have, as I understand it currently, a for-profit company in the United States which distributes the things. And then they have some sort of nonprofit foundation, which is meant to route the profit back to the cooperative to do social things in Ecuador with the money made from selling chocolate. So what here is the social enterprise? What here is a social economy organization? Is the whole, do you, treat the whole thing, or do you look at the so parts?
So the foundation, I would say this foundation plus the co-op as a networked organization, right? Those are two separate entities, mm-hmm. but they have some deep connectivity between them. The cooperative...
It is hoped, yes.
Yeah. So in a way, it's the cooperative becomes the social enterprise arm of the foundation, if that description was correct.
Okay.
And that would seem to me a social enterprise, because the profits aren't distributed, right? It has a social mission, it is producing for the market. And then the social ownership part is embodied in the foundation. And then it would depend on the details about the cooperative as to whether it also would constitute a form of social ownership. I'm prepared to regard cooperatives as, you know, a hybrid form of social ownership. They're not, because they're not pure investor firms because of the connection between the worker and the capital. Bunch of hands. Let's see.
I just wonder. The non-distributed constraints necessarily include participatory democratic governance.
No, that would be an additional. So that's plus governance, you know, stakeholder and participatory.
Which some have and some don't, right?
Yeah. Right, so you can be stakeholder without being participatory. That is, the employees don't necessarily have any voice. You can be participatory without stakeholder, that would be co-ops. Standard co-ops are participatory, but they don't have stakeholder boards. Or you can have both.
So this is not really a criterion.
Right, so the question is, do we want to include this as a criterion for being a social enterprise, or for being a more deeply egalitarian and democratic social enterprise? I think this shouldn't be a criterion for being a social enterprise. If it's socially owned, then some social ownership means that you need some kind of board of trustees, right? So it's going to be pretty rare not to have some sort of stakeholder board if you have social ownership. Just that form, social ownership, where the assets are owned socially and are not the property of the participants, would generally go along with a board of trustees or directors that would have representation from the relevant constituencies. That may even be required. I think in the definitions of these social cooperatives, it's legally required that they have representation on the boards of these various constituencies. That may, in fact, generally be the case.
And just to make it clear, so the non-distribution constraints means no return to investment.
It means that...
no investment to investment.
Yeah, there's no private investment that you get a return. Right?
So, for example, consumer cooperative, it's a return based on the using, patronage.
Right.
Or like a workers' cooperative, which don't return just based on their work contribution.
So the worker cooperatives are quite variable in how they deal with this particular issue.
Yeah. So okay. I mean, I'm just going to make it clear. So consumer cooperative, which distribute surplus based on their patronage, is included in this criteria, non-distribution and no return to investment or social ownership.
What I don't know for sure, the expression non-distribution constraint, as it was used here, I think was a little stronger. It was that the profits are not distributed to persons. Mm-hmm. They have to go into some fund for the organization. So a consumer cooperative that distributes the annual profits to the consumers based on how much they spend would count as a distribution of profits. It's not based on investment, it's based on a different criterion.
Okay. So it's different from based non return to investment and also social ownership. Sometimes social ownership means consumer cooperative also include social ownership. I mean, it's a
So with consumer cooperatives, I believe it's the case that if the Willie Street Co-op decides to close up and sell the land and the buildings, it then has a, you know, few hundred thousand dollars or $1 million, whatever, in the bank as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
The Board of Trustees of Willie Co-op cannot put that money in their pocket, nor can they. Nor do they distribute on a per capita basis that money to all the members. I think that money has to then go, as stipulated in some law or contract, to some other association. I believe that's the case. That's not true for all co-ops, however. I think it is the case for consumer co-ops, but I may be wrong. But that would be the to me, that's the social ownership issue, is whether persons own the firm or it's owned by some collective entity that's not the people directly involved. Matt.
When you say, this is a different question, I hope we can ask a different question.
Sure.
When you say producing goods and services for the market,
right.
What's the market?
I mean, it's for people and it's sold on the market.
So not necessarily above cost or at cost. Could be below cost.
The way it seems to be characterized here is that it's a commercial activity. So social enterprises engage in commercial activity. That means, I think, in general, you expect it to cover costs.
Yeah.
If it's not, then it's basically the same as producing it directly for need, free, but then trying to recoup some of your losses. That's not normal. I mean, I don't know. There'd be a gray area. If you're producing for the market but deciding to use the funds that you get from donations or the state to sell it at below cost, then you're not subject to any, there's no market discipline,
right?
You're not engaged in any kind of market competition because you're selling it below cost.
Yeah, I mean, in the event of a sliding scale organization that charges different prices to different types of people or different types of buyers, there may be multiple sliding scale organizations that one sliding scale is higher than the other. They're competing against each other.
So I guess the way I would put it is that these are the kind of gray area cases that slide from a full-blown social enterprise, which is trying to generate revenues for its organization through commercial activity, but the revenues are not privately appropriated by anybody, and the assets of the organization are socially owned. You know, that's the clearer case. Then there, and the clearer case that isn't that is an organization that's producing free services, that it's completely non-market. It's just producing after-school programs for kids, and the kids just come to them, right? So the Boys and Girls Clubs in Madison have a wonderful set of after-school programs in South Madison, and the kids come and participate in these activities. It's not the case that they are a commercial enterprise selling the service of after-school programs. Now, if they charge a membership fee, if it costs $10 a year to be a member, they're getting a little bit of their revenues from the people they serve. Does that count? You know, I think then the way to put it was probably it's not really a social enterprise, it's a social economy organization that just has a little bit of social enterprise-y character to it.
So in that case, do we define social economy organizations, any organization that has a social mission and produces goods and services, not necessarily...
But not...
because I get confused in the middle.
Yeah. So a social economy organization produces, you know, it does something. It's, it's engaged in economic activity to meet human needs, but it's not necessarily selling it.
on a market. Yeah.
So theoretically, if all capitalist corporations were replaced by social enterprises, would they then still engage? Would there still be a place for the market to exchange goods and services?
Yeah. Sure. You could still sell on the market, and you could still even have competition. So if you produce, if you could have a whole bunch of, so all restaurants could be social economy cooperatives selling food, but people still choose which restaurants to go to.
Yeah. Girl Scout cookies versus Boy Scout cookies.
Yeah. Okay. You know, and
there are no Boy Scout
so cookies. You could still, yeah, I don't, the competitive pressures would be much weaker because of the absence of the, you know, the absence of the distribution reduces the incentive to try to undercut other firms, because so you'd have weaker competitive pressures in a market that was populated entirely by social enterprises. But it would still be a market in the sense that you'd be selling.
And there'd be a price mechanism.
I'm just having trouble with this notion of social mission and social ownership, because of what we were talking about before with corporate social responsibility and how they might claim to have a social mission. And so how do we differentiate, you know, between a claim to a social mission and actually having...
But they have a social mission, but they don't satisfy this condition.
But, okay, so then over to social ownership. So then, let's say you have a consumer cooperative, if the assets are to be liquidated, they have to be spent in a way which is in the interest of all of the owners,
I don't know what the rules of the game are for different kinds of cooperatives. The rules of the game for liquidation for foundations is the money has to go to another foundation. And they don't say if a museum liquidates, it doesn't have to give money to another museum, as far as I know. Maybe, you know, there might be rules even at that level of specificity. It's just that if a nonprofit foundation of a particular legal classification liquidates, it has to give its money to another nonprofit foundation. Sometimes this allows for scams, right? Because you can have phony organizations where you launder your money. You know, so it's not that it can't be abused, but that's the principle for foundations and for nonprofits. Co-ops are not nonprofits; they're a different kind of organization, and I don't know what the rules are. When I asked in Quebec about solidarity co-ops, their rules are the same as for nonprofits. So a solidarity co-op, if it liquidates, the funds have to go to some association. So there's an association of childcare, early infant childcare centers, and it's the claimant on the assets of its members. In the sense that if they dissolve, the money goes back to that, not back to, because they didn't necessarily put up the money. You know, so a group of people will form a daycare center. They'll put up the money, they'll raise money through government grants, through private foundations, whatever. They'll build this daycare center. They'll become part of the Association of Early Childhood Providers. They'll be governed by a solidarity board. If they go bust or if they decide to quit, the funds then go to the parent association to use for whatever purposes, which includes setting up new daycare centers or remodeling old ones or whatever.
But still, it serves the same constituency.
Well, in that case it does, because it's part of this association, but in the case of nonprofit foundations, I don't think there's a restriction. You just have to give it to another. An environmental nonprofit doesn't have to, if it decides to sell its assets, has to give it to another environmental nonprofit.
So it's not worth it to further constrain the definition by saying that a social enterprise has to have a constituency or has to serve a social group. just in terms of tying these sort of pieces together.
So what I think the reason why, I mean, this has been a, for me, it's been a clarifying. So here, let me just discuss, since we're almost done, what the logic of concept formation is here. We have three clusters of elements here, right? We've observed that in the literature, sometimes all three are present, sometimes these two get put together, sometimes these two get put together. Now the reason to have this one as well as these is the following. If you have this, you necessarily have this, right? So there's no use that's just this, because this is necessarily entailed by this set of things. That is, you have a social mission if there's non-distribution and social ownership. But because sometimes people have these two, that is, there are usages of the term social enterprise, these corporate social responsibility case, which breaks off the social mission from this this configuration and packages it with commercial activity. That's why it's worth making this explicit. Even though whenever this is invoked, this will either be implicitly or explicitly invoked. Now the question of what is a social mission, we've had, I think, a good set of different ideas about this as to whether the social mission has to be outside of the membership or not. I think the main view in the readings was it doesn't have to be outside, because they included mutualist organizations as having a social mission. And that's a social mission of just reciprocity among the participants. Which reinforces the idea that the social and social mission just means non-profit maximizing mission. So it can be either for the members, for the workers in the firm, or for the community at large. You know, I think that's what the implication.
But when they say corporate responsibility, social mission means people outside of.
Yeah.
So there's two really uses.
There's really two uses, right?
That's. I mean, isn't it? I mean, to me, that's why we're arguing. I mean, in the interrogation, we're responding. I mean, we get furious when we see these. I mean, that's why we're discussing the quality of social mission. I mean, even though there is a social mission, we discuss that quality.
Right.
I mean, in corporate social responsibility, in microcredits and things like that. That's why we say this is a social mission in the sense that helping people other, but not the way we really like.
Microfinance thing.
Microfinance, second-hand clothing in Zambia, Nigeria, and corporate social responsibility. The discussion revolves around that part.
It's after 5:30. I want to say I'm really impressed with us today, because when I read the book, I wasn't sure we had 3 hours of discussion. And actually, I think the discussion, you know, even though we were spinning wheels a little bit at times, I think us sticking with this actually was pretty productive. I mean, I felt like we ended up in a, you know, clear.
So I just happened to have the Wisconsin Corporation statute in my computer, and if there are different ways that you can dissolve a cooperative, but if you choose to do it voluntarily, then after paying all of the debts and liabilities and things, the next thing is you may pay the members according to what your bylaws, your internal governance,
right, whatever they say,
says.
Is the, right.
And then if anybody doesn't pick up their money that they're due, then you know there's other things that happen and it may go to the state.
So that would be for a consumer co-op too. There, in the bylaws of the consumer co-op, there'd be some.
This is just the general cooperative law. So
it might be. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
So that's why cooperatives have more the character of private property than a lot of these other associations, and that's why cooperatives do have a kind of hybrid quality to them. It's also why cooperatives do sometimes convert into capitalist firms. What was that?
This is my tea bag. You know,
and you're
an opportune location.
Okay. Next week, it'll be a very different kind of
book we're reading. I think you'll. I did not assign as kind of the core readings the entire book. It's not that long. If you do have time, it would be. It's not a bad thing to read the entire book, I think. I've tried to pick out the ones that are most germane to things we've already been talking about. But it's an important current of left thinking that they're part of. They're at the university. Julie Graham is at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Catherine Gibson is in Australia, or the other way around, but I think I've got it right. They're geographers by training, but they're very close to Stephen Resnick and Wolf and Resnick. What's Wolf's first name? Just Resnick and Wolf, anyway. Who are...
Richard.
Resnick and Wolf are two very influential post-structuralist Marxists. They're the founders of a journal called Rethinking Marxism. They write things that some of what they write I find almost incomprehensible. I mean, I just really find it hard to figure out what they're talking about. There are a few little places in the Gibson Graham book which have that character. Mostly they've emancipated their style from this postmodernist, post-structuralist Marxism of Resnick and Wolf. Wolf, on the other hand, when he lectures, is unbelievably clear and compelling. So it's this totally weird thing that he writes in such a turgid way. He's given some fantastic lectures on the current crisis. I think they're available online, which are definitely worth writing, listening to, or watching, because he just gets down to the bottom line and gores the bad guys and really has elegant ways of telling the story. So he's a great lecturer and an incomprehensible, exaggerating a little bit, writer. Okay.